ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present the Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of the Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I am Branham, it's Brian behind the glass, and it's a Tuesday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Great to have Brian back today. We really missed him. Would never say a bad thing about him. Really sad.
Now I feel
that
like I gotta go check the tape.
Yesterday.
Yeah, now I gotta go check
the
tape.
But Sean was awesome.
I love Sean. Yeah.
We told Skyler to burn the tape, so I don't know if it exists.
Unfortunately for you, Jeremy, in this situation, we're no longer on reel to reel. That's been outdated by now, so no tape to burn.
Oh. Okay. Well, that's okay. I'm not scared. Blanker's back at the studio. I'm on remote today. I have a new game because I am I like games. I'm a gamey kind of guy. I like games. So new game. I haven't run this by anybody.
You're gamey?
Sounds like you stink.
I'm gamey. You're a lot louder than Blanker's, by the way, Brian. Why are you trying to overpower Joel?
I'll turn myself down.
He's actually right. Yeah, because even in my headphones, my microphone seems low.
You notice that too.
Give him a little more flair in his headphone. A little more flair in his headphone. New game we're going to play here. I haven't run this by anybody, so it might not be in existence after today. But where in the world is Jeremy San Diego? If you're on YouTube and you look to see where I'm at, if you can identify my location, where in the world is Jeremy San Diego, you win a free T-shirt at our next remote. You have to go get it. You have to go to the promo table. You have to make sure we have any left.
It's the size that they have left.
Yeah, and I mean, we're not guaranteeing your size. We're not guaranteeing that you're going to get a size at all. You know, it's not always about that. But if you can identify, first person in YouTube that can identify where I'm at, you'll get a T-shirt at our next remote. You have to go to the promotions table and do all of the work, but we'll make that happen. So where in the world is Jeremy San Diego today? Twitchers can't play because they can't leave their mother's basement.
Yeah, they don't go to remotes.
Yeah, they don't go to remotes. Happy tax day.
A fat guy in his underwear living in his mother's basement.
Happy tax day for all those that celebrate. Did you pay your taxes, Blinkers?
Hopefully they'll be done by tonight.
Okay. Oh.
What do you mean hopefully? Oh. You don't know?
I have someone that does them, and we have been conversing, and I haven't heard
that's
to the
even
contrary.
Worse.
So
like
I am very hopeful
person.
That they will be done in tonight. Otherwise, we'll be getting an extension.
He'll probably get an extension. That's crazy though that you have somebody that does them and they're not done on April 15th.
Yeah, part of that's my fault.
Yeah, I paid today.
Yeah, I think the follow up question is, when did you get him the relevant materials?
She.
Okay,
I got her.
That's on me.
I got her.
That's dangerous.
Probably the last day of March.
Oh yeah, she.
That's kind of late. No, that's kind of late.
It is a little late. It is a little late.
Okay,
yeah. All right. I admit that.
I think I gave my guy my stuff by like mid February. Maybe even early February. I always feel like I'm screwing up if I don't get it to him like first day of February. I feel like I'm messing up if it's not in his hands by the beginning of February.
Yeah, I dread it, but I was guilty of it this year. I knew that I was like pushing it.
Yeah, she'll be able to give you an extension though. I feel like that always happens. Brian, have you paid your taxes?
Yeah, like that's good. On the 3rd, I think.
Okay, look at you being all proactive.
Flex, yeah.
It's also kind of bad to do that, though, because now you don't get 12 days of savings. You know what I mean? Like, I'm the kind of guy that pays on the final day because I want to get every ounce of interest I can get. So that's why I paid today. I would ask the Twitchers if they paid, but they don't have an income, so I think they're okay. Astros yesterday lose in St. Louis. Fromber, the storyline here. Not a good day for Fromber Valdez.
No, not a good day at all. Got hit around pretty good. Was not his best effort. I think that as much as he was not good, and, you know, he's been good, better than bad this year. And I see people just thinking that the wheels are falling off and this whole thing is a mess. But he was not good. And then the offense is just horrible. I mean, to me, at least in the past, and I know everybody can point to the one game in Minnesota where they actually did make a comeback down 7-1. But overall, for me, the biggest difference with this team and offensively where they're at right now versus teams we've seen during this kind of golden era is the fact that the offense, I just don't have the same kind of confidence that, oh, it's a couple-run game. They'll be fine. They can get back in it. Right now, you just got too many guys struggling, and you don't have kind of the big bats you've had in the past, and the big bats you do have not been power hitting. That it kind of sucks that when your starting pitcher gives up some runs early, I personally feel like, oh man, this one's probably over.
Yeah. I'm fascinated you went to the offense where Fromber got destroyed.
No, I'm just saying because overall, the pitching has been better than average. The pitching from the starters and the relievers and everybody, I understandably, when Fromber has a night like this, or like we'll point out if a reliever or two has a rough night. But overall, the biggest issue with this team, to me, is just the lack of offense. The fact that they don't put a lot of runs on the board, and when they do, it's all in one game here or one game there. But that offensively, they're not the same kind of team that we're used to seeing. And you hope that the guys that have been struggling kind of pick it up and get back to what we're used to seeing from them, or in Christian Walker's case, what he's done in his career for the most part. But it's a tough watch for me when they get down three or four runs even early, because I'm like, even if Fromber got beat up a little bit, I'm like, man, in the past, I'd like, they can fight their way back into this. And now I'm like, boy.
You thought that last year?
Yeah, there were a lot of, oh, yeah, absolutely. Once they got, I mean, obviously they got off to a slow start. But overall, with the offense that they had, I felt like that they could, especially before Kyle Tucker got hurt, I just felt like they always had a chance to get back in a three or four run game. So far this year, it's like, I just don't feel great. When they get down three or four, I'm like, this one's probably over.
What was the game Sunday? Weren't they down 3-0 on Sunday against the Angels? What was their deficit of that game? I can't remember.
I don't remember.
I think it was 2-0.
Okay.
Was it 2-0?
And then they put the 5-spot on and
yeah,
erased
it was 2-0. 2-0 going into the bottom of the second. 5-spot in the second. Yeah. So, yeah, maybe a couple runs, but not a few runs. They're in danger. And look, I think you're talking a little bit bigger picture than that one specific game. And I don't really disagree. Just wanted to kind of get you to expand on it a little bit from, like, you know, what is Blankers thinking? But, yeah, I mean, this offense is kind of mid. It's been mid there. Maybe they'll, you know, find some fire or something. I don't know. From a Fromber perspective, to me, it was his command was just bad. Like, he was leaving so many curveballs up in the zone, hittable pitches. You're looking, I mean, even like in two strike counts where you're trying to spin a curveball in the dirt, like, he's leaving it at the knees. Like, that matters in the bigs. Like, you're trying to win in the margins here. And whenever you do that, you can't have success no matter how good your stuff is. He left – I can't remember the hitters that he was doing this with, but I went back and watched the condensed game this morning. Breaking ball, middle, double down the line, hanging changeup off the wall in right center field. I think it was simply the command for Fromber. Like, sometimes we think way too much in, like, invent things about certain pitchers or whatever. He just didn't have his command. Like, to me, it's that simple. That's why he struggled yesterday, and that's why he got lit up.
Well, and you touched on it. I mean, this isn't even Sugarland, and we always joke about 3A, 4A type players. When you look at the major leagues, if you leave something, you know, from the middle of the thigh to the letters, you're going to get hurt, and you're going to get hurt pretty severely in most cases. And as good as he is and can be, I mean, these are the things that happen just about any pitcher, too. I mean, there are going to be nights when you just don't have your A game. How you try to battle out of it, can you think your way through a start when you don't have your best stuff? That's always what makes some of the elite pitchers in this league. But I'm not ready to pull the plug on Fromber yet, or, I mean, man, the morning show was having one. They were on one this morning because Lance was basically already, like, throwing in the towel on this team and trade Fromber now, and he pulled a Joe George. I mean, he was ready to just kind of exit stage left and start the rebuild, and I'm going, man, it's just one game.
He was ready to trade him?
Yeah. He's like, I mean, they're not going anywhere, and this isn't even close to a team that, you know, is anywhere like anything we've seen before, and, you know, you might as well trade him now and get some prospects, and that's what they need to do. And I'm going, wow. Oh, they're 7-9. Slow down.
It's April 15th.
Yeah.
Like, even if he's right, because, I mean, look, maybe the Astros are going to be an 85-win team in third place in the AL West and not make the playoffs. Like, I'm not going to say that that isn't in their range. Like, that could happen. That could happen. And even if you know 100%, if you know 100% the Astros are going to win no more than 85 games and miss the playoffs, I agree with the trade Fromber take. but not on April 15th. Like, this is that's something you do in July when pitchers are, like, these contenders are desperate for pitchers and they're overpaying for pitchers in July when it's closer to the deadline. Like, you're not doing that on April 15th.
I mean, here's the thing, and Brian McTaggart had it, he had it today, where he tweeted out that their record over the last six seasons after 16 games, five of the last six seasons they were 7-9, and last year they were 5-11. So actually they've taken a step up from last year, but overall they're only two games under 500, and we're only 16 games in, and people are already just acting like the sky is falling and this team is going nowhere, and it's a dead end that needs to be, you know, start shipping guys out and trying to get prospects and hit the reset button. And it's just, it's way too early for that.
Yeah, I mean, they might eventually be right. Like,
you're
I'm not going to say they're wrong, but this is not a conversation that you have on April 15th.
No,
like you're not trading the top starter in your rotation, maybe, on April 15th. Like, you're going to see how it goes. Like, you're going to see where you're at July 1. You're going to see where you're at July 15th. Well, like, that's a few months away now. Let's pump the brakes a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, Lance is sitting there going, you know what, and there's no chance of a wild card. I mean, their only chance is if they could win the division. You're in the race for the division right now. Your division is not anybody running away with it like gangbusters. The Angels, for God's sake, who have been the doormat of this division forever, were in first place until they came into Houston.
They're back in first.
Okay, but you took two out of three from them, too. My point being that nothing is out of reach for you this early in the season, and even from a divisional standpoint, it's not like anybody's on a hot streak like you got going in the NL West when the Padres, Giants, and Dodgers are just, you know, roasting a lot of their competition. This is a division that's extremely winnable, and 16 games in, I'm not ready to say that it's unobtainable to say that they can win the division.
Yeah, it's very hot takey to have that strong of a take. 16, it's a tenth of the way through the year. It's a tenth of the way through the season. We're ready to sell the farm.
Like, there goes my cash for trash.
It's crazy. The Astros are closer to the division than the wild card, though. So Lance is right about that. The Astros are 2.5 back of the lead in the AL West, and they're 3 back of the wild card. So,
but he's not right about that. If he makes the statement, there's no chance they're going to get the wild card this year. There's always a chance this early in the season.
Yeah, yeah, and plus, I don't think the AL is all that fantastic. Like, to me, there's not five really good American League teams. I think the AL is wide open.
Like, it absolutely is. The Yankees got worse the minute that they lost Soto. They lost pitching. You know, when they lost Gerrit Cole, and everybody always puts them right at the top of the list as the team to beat in the American League. Yeah, the Tigers have Skubal, and they've got some good young talent, and they beat you last year, and they look like they're going to have a good year this year. But I'm right there with you. Like, there's no team in the American League that scares me or is intimidating to me. Like, when you look at the National League and the teams that I just mentioned, not named the Giants, who are really, you're doing more than I expected from them. But when you look at the Padres roster, when you look at the Dodgers roster, when you look at teams like that, and you're like, those teams are legit, and they've spent a boat ton of money to get there. But in the American League, I don't see any teams like that.
No. And I misspoke, by the way. The Astros are 2 back of the wild card, 2.5 of the division. So they're in the thick of the race. They're in the thick of this race. You're trading Framber Valdez when you're in the thick of the race. 2.5 back in the division, 2 back in the wild card. I mean, come on. This is the thick of the race. This is the stretch drive. Why are we trading Framber Valdez in the stretch drive when the Astros are 2 back in the wild card and 2.5 back in the division? Huh?
It just caught my ear this morning driving the girls to school, and I'm like, okay, Lance, pump the brakes a little bit, man. We're not even into June yet, and we're ready to pull the plug.
Yeah, this is the hot takes I've seen today are fascinating.
They're all over, man. I was talking to Brian before the show, and I actually put it on the rundown. Like, this is the most volatile and dramatic Astros fan base that I've seen in years. I know that they're always, like, quick to get ready to get on the ledge and start contemplating things. But, my God, if you come back in a game in Minnesota, they got everything. They're going to be all right. And then when you lose a game like last night, nope, that's it. Pull the plug, trade Framber, see what you can get for a couple other guys. Let's get the hell out of here and rebuild.
What are the fans contemplating exactly?
I mean, they're contemplating, like, pulling the plug and trading and just, like, you know, what they need to, what the organization needs to do now to start the rebuild, because they don't have a chance this year. And you're going, are you kidding me?
Are we the voice of reason?
I think in a lot of ways we are. We have been.
That's a weird position to find ourselves in, as the voices of reason.
But it's a good position because you can go on one place on the dial and you can get nothing but, you know, minutia and, you know, all the different rhetoric that you need to feel like your heart is full and this team is awesome. And then you've got the other spot on the dial where unless baseball players wear a Texans logo, you're not going to talk about them. Just being honest.
7-1, let's go to break. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. Are the Killer Bees the voices of reason? 713-780-3776. Are all these hot takes too early? Is it too early to have these hot takes for the Astros 16 games into the year? What do you make of Fromber? I have some other nuggets from yesterday's game as well. 713-780-ESPN, the HRNP listener line. We're on YouTube at ESPN Houston. We're on Twitter at ESPN975. Blanker's at Pac-Man Joel. Brian's at Sacked by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. And we are the Killer Bees on ESPN, the voices of reason on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, a word from a good friend, Doc Linville. I was talking to Doc the other day, and he was talking about the fact that, you know, of the listeners and the people that have come to him after hearing me and John talk about him, that they have had huge success. The people are could not be happier. They're seeing the results of getting their hair back. And that makes me feel good because I'm not one that likes to sit there and pump and promote and speak for companies that I don't believe in. And I've always believed in Doc. He does a lot of great things. He does Botox, spa treatments, plastic surgery. But what I have personal experience with is getting my hair back and keeping the hair that I have thanks to the two different procedures that he has. He has the PRP treatments, and you've heard of platelet-rich plasma in athletes that use it for their knees and for their shoulders and for their joints. Well, now you also find out that you can do it for your hair, too. And it's essentially like fertilizing your lawn. And you put fertilizer on your lawn when the grass is there, but it's not as thick and lush as it used to be, and it helps get you to that point again. That's what PRP treatment does. If you're a little bit past that, Doc will tell you, they'll say, hey, look, but we do have the NeoGraft procedure, and where you've already have bald spots that there is no more hair worth saving there or not enough of it, we could do the we could do the NeoGraft procedure, which is taking hair from places you're never going to lose it, sides in the back of your head, putting it where you need it most, hairline in front, bald spot up on top and back, other areas on your scalp. And it is a game-changing experience because it works. And you get your confidence back, and you like the way you look again, and you feel really good about the fact that you did what you were supposed to do and get your hair back. It's fantastic. And basically what he does by kind of having me read for him is he says, hey, look, if you listen to the Killer Bees and you want to talk to me, first consultation's free, just like I had. People off the street pay $150. You're listening to me, you want to talk to him, go to 975hair.com right now and set up a consultation. It's absolutely free. You go in, they explain everything to you, they show you the before and after pictures of people like me, and you can understand how everything works, and then it's up to you. There's no signing on the dotted line, commitment to be made, or money out of pocket. It's just you figuring out if this is something you want to do. I did it. I couldn't be happier with it. You could be the next in line to do the exact same thing. Go see my friends today. Doc Linville is right there in the Med Center. Just go to 975hair.com.
ESPN 97.5. Now back to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We got one rejoin in, and Brian's already playing punk music.
I'm waiting to hear the problem.
I think I said it, punk music. On YouTube, Desert Stro wins the trade. Fromber now voices come up. Apparently, Lance had it this morning.
This morning. It's there.
Desert Stro. I had the same feeling as Blankers when they got down four, down three, then four. Game over, sad. Bobby said, Lance said if they aren't better at the break, which I took as the All-Star break, not April 15th, then they should move on from Fromber. Okay, I can agree with that.
It's not where he started. I don't know if I didn't hear that part of it, but okay.
Yeah, either way, April 15th too early, All-Star break, more than fair. I would even say like July 1, more than fair, depending on where they're at. So, yeah, I mean, whatever he said, it's just whatever he said. That's my stance on it. Alex called Lance soft. I don't know if he's soft. That seems kind of mean. Alex also says R-E-L-A-X. Relax. They'll be fine. Hopefully. Yeah, we'll see.
Hopefully is where I think I would put that for sure.
Texter, it's very clear that the Astros team will be a work in progress, but let's not forget how horrible they started last year and ended up winning the division. They didn't even have a winning record until June. Fair point. That's a point that you made a while ago too. And like the division's just all hanging around too. Like no one's running away with it. And it's 16 games. Mm-hmm. 16 games. Like let's chill a little bit.
That's the biggest thing. It's just that it's one thing to be, you know, not have the desperation, but that attitude of, hey, I want this golden era to continue, and you know that you saw two of the last three remaining really super big names and pillars of the golden era, you know, walk away this year, whether it be via trade or free agency, and people are on edge and they're freaking out and they don't believe that. You know, they don't know enough about the guys that they brought in to figure out that, hey, there's still a good baseball team right there in that locker room that can win baseball games.
King says, I'd take Ozzie Guillen right now. It'd be entertaining. Chris says, last year I blamed a spotter. This year Jim's Crane wallet is to blame for the slow start. Bregman gone, Tucker gone.
See, but look, and I think you feel the same way, but we had the conversation over and over again as voices of reason. I'm not paying Alex Bregman $40 million a year, and I don't care what's deferred. It's $40 million, and I'm not paying him that. I don't think he's worth it for the long haul. And if Boston was willing to do that, then, hey, we tried. In this case, we think that they really did make a good effort to go get him. But at that price, I'm not going to do that. And I think you have to be realistic on Kyle Tucker. And based on the way he started the season, you're seeing exactly why the Astros did what they hadn't done in the past, and they were willing to move on from a guy that they admitted in their heart of hearts they weren't going to sign. And so they got something for him before he walked out the door for nothing, knowing damn well that he's going to get somewhere in the neighborhood of $500-plus million on a contract that Jim Crane doesn't want to pay. That I understand. I don't think he's cheap. I don't think that in the past he has been anything other than a willing owner trying to put what pieces are necessary. This offseason, we discussed it. He didn't want to go over the tax again, and he didn't. He's got a little. They got a little money to play with, but I mean, I don't call that cheap.
Why did they trade Tucker though?
They traded Tucker because of the fact that in their business, their model, because
he didn't want to pay
model,
him.
Yeah, their business model. They felt like they feel like that's not the kind of contract that they're in for. Which is same with Bregman, which is the same with just about anybody else that, you know, that walked on free agency that were big names, that they feel like there's another means and way to get to a similar destination than paying hundreds of millions of dollars.
Well, that's a long way to say he's cheap.
I don't think he's cheap, Jeremy, and I don't think you do either. You've been very staunch at saying you don't think he's cheap.
No, I've never used the word cheap. I can't remember the word that I used.
Frugal?
Maybe frugal, maybe responsible, but there are owners who would go out and just say whatever, pay the man the money. Like Steve Cohen would probably do it. Somebody's going to pay Tucker, so somebody's going to pay him. Like right, Crane's not that owner. So, like, cheap is kind of relative. Like, is Crane cheap to Steve Cohen? Yeah. Is he cheap to the Dodgers? Yeah. Do I think that that's unfair expectation of Jim Crane? Yes. And I would have traded Tucker, too. I don't believe in huge contracts for players in their 30s. I believe that if you're going to have a payroll around the luxury tax, that there are better ways to get a return on investment and that return on investment equates wins than it is to spend a big piece of that pie on a couple of free agents that are well into their 30s. So I too, would not have paid Tucker, and if I'm not going to pay Tucker, I would have traded him. I would have traded Bregman last offseason. Maybe that's part of Lance's thought, too, with the Fromber thing, which I do think the Astros tried to trade Fromber. I don't think they liked the return that they got in the offseason, though. But I can certainly understand why a fan would say cheap. Like, they traded Tucker because they didn't want to pay him. They didn't match Alex Bregman's contract or go above and beyond to make sure he stayed in Houston. So I wouldn't use the word cheap, but I can certainly understand the argument.
Okay. I don't think they're cheap. I think that the same way, and that, you know, it took the two moves correlated, but Bregman walked out. What you got in return for Tucker gave you a guy that again, find a different way to a means to get to where you were, that right now looks like he can be competitive putting up stats like Alex Bregman. If he falls a little short, you know, you could take the difference between $6 million and $40 million and say, well, he fell a little short, but you saved, you know, $34 million in the process. You're doing all right.
But there's no doubt that they moved on from both of those players because of money.
Because of a business philosophy that relates to money. I think that, you know, you can make a dumb move, but say that I'm going to make a dumb move that financially and success-wise doesn't make a lot of sense, but I'm doing it because I'm paying him hundreds of millions of dollars. And you can also say, hey, look, I can still win. I can still be competitive, but I'm not going to do a stupid move just because it makes me look less cheap.
Yeah, but it's still, they didn't want to pay it. Like, it still ultimately comes down to they don't want to pay that contract. which, look, I mean, I don't disagree with you. But again, like, fans are like, well, these other owners are paying these kind of contracts. Why isn't Crane paying this type of contract? And ultimately, it comes down to money.
But I think also being intelligent with your money, and he's a smart businessman. And you know that they're up. It's not that like they're cheap when you look at how much they spend on salaries every year. You know they're up against the luxury tax, so you know that they're spending money. It's just that they don't feel like that's a smart business money business move, spending money.
Maybe this is splitting hairs. It feels like sometimes in this conversation about because cheap is, I guess, relative to whoever's having the conversation, right? Like, they're top, you know, what top third in the league in spending, so they're not cheap by that metric, but it kind of comes to, I guess, the way the baseball is set up, where I think we have to grade cheap or not cheap on a different scale than we would football or basketball, because they're not cheap. They're spending top third, sure, but baseball is set up in a way to where there's kind of a haves and have-nots. You're kind of put into two groups. Essentially, the Dodgers, the Yankees, those teams are seemingly willing to spend, you know, every dollar they could possibly spend, Mets included recently, and the Astros are not willing to do that. So, I mean, obviously they've proven they can compete against those teams that are willing to spend more than them. They did it for seven straight years during the Golden Era, but it puts them at a disadvantage to those top teams like the Dodgers, the Yankees, and the Mets, where they're not willing to play on the same scale that those other teams are willing to pay.
But doesn't it come down to what you can pay too? Because Steve Cohen's got basically unlimited money.
That's what I'm saying. It's a haves and haves nots.
Yeah.
I mean, we can phrase it haves and haves nots, cheap, not cheap. We can phrase it however we want. But the Astros aren't playing the same game that those other teams are playing.
No, no. And look, Jim Crane's net worth is $2.4 billion. Like, it's not Cohen. Cohen's 10 times that, nearly. But it's not like Crane can't do it. Crane is capable of doing it. And again, I don't think that they should. I think there's a better way to spend responsibly, especially if Crane's saying, you know, we want to be right around the competitive balance tax. Maybe some years we'll go just over. Other years that we don't, let's be under. And, like, I'm okay with that. Like, I'm okay with an owner operating from that payroll perspective. So if you are doing that and you're treating that as a salary cap, then you can't be spending that kind of money on Bregman. You can't be spending that kind of money on Tucker. And if you are going to not do that, if you're not going to pay those guys, then you should be trying to trade them. They did Tucker. They didn't Bregman. That way you can get a return of young players that hopefully blossom and help your team down the road. And they are. Like, I mean, Cam Smith's helping the team, hopefully for a long time. Paredes is helping the team. Wisniewski's helping the team. So I have no problem with what he did. But the reason they're gone is because of finances. Like, there's no other reason. If it wasn't for finances, if every Major League Baseball player made the same amount of money and it did not change, Kyle Tucker and Alex Bregman would be an Astro. Like, they got rid of them because of finances.
Yeah, but I think that it's – and again – we're splitting hairs, but at the same time, when you look at it, yeah, it's because of finances, but also because we know that one or two bad deals can sink a ship no matter how good maybe the rest of the roster may be when you make a mistake like this that affects you for the next 7 to 10 years.
Depends on how much money you're willing to spend. Because you can – I mean, if you're Cohen, you can outspend your bad contracts.
Yeah, that's a have-not conversation.
Yes, the Astros cannot. I agree.
Yeah, because, I mean, look, even with the Yankees, they go and they take Stanton's contract. And they're just, you know, they just pile money on money, and they don't even bat an eye. Where there's no way that Jim Crane, even if he wanted to, he knows that he can't do that because he doesn't have the means that these other teams have. So I commend them for doing what they weren't willing to do previously by actually trading a guy before he just walks out the door.
Uh-huh. See, but I think he has the means. He just doesn't want to use the means.
Okay. I just think philosophically and maybe also intelligently, he just doesn't think that he made a business decision.
Yeah, yeah. I have no problem with that. And look, again, I would have done those things. But it was financially driven. Like, to me, you can't argue that. To me, it's a fact. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Your thoughts on where the Astros are? I still have some game one thoughts from that loss yesterday to St. Louis. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Do you have the ESPN Houston app? Download it now in your app store.
You're listening. listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Astros are 7-9, and we're questioning if the owner's cheap. This baseball for you.
The world we live in.
Yep. The Astros spin efficiently and effectively while retaining multiple years worth of control, but not decades worth. The only two goof-ups were mainly when they didn't have a GM. Yeah, time will tell on Dana, but I would agree mostly with that. Now, another text, the Astros used to be able to let players walk and still compete because they had a good farm system, which they no longer have. I would agree with that as well, which how can you do both, right? Like, how can you continue to have a good farm system while also sustaining winning? I think the way you do that is a bunch of the Kyle Tucker trades. Mm-hmm. Instead of letting Bregman leave for a fourth-round compensation pick, you traded him last offseason for a similar return, or maybe not as good as the one you got for Tucker. That's probably why the Framber-Valdez conversation has come up, but I do think that Dana tried to trade Framber. Same thing with all the players that left. You know, maybe not Cole, because you only had him for 2 years, and he kind of was a hired gun because you went out and traded for him. I think that's the way that you sustain winning and continue to have a good minor league system that you can pluck prospects from that continue to help the big league club. But then the second part of that is that you do need to spend in free agency on short-term contracts, like the Michael Brantleys of the world, the Brian McCanns of the world, the Josh Reddicks of the world. So I do think that it can be done, but I do think that you need to be more aggressive on the trade market and probably still very active in free agency while avoiding the long-term deals.
Yeah, I think we talked about it, you know, when we were talking as the offseason started about what to do and would they be willing to trade Tucker, trade Framber, and explore possibilities. And my first comment was, well, if you do that, you know, can you find a right fielder replace Tucker that on a shorter term deal might be a veteran that wants a chance to win, whatever the scenario might, you know, present itself to be, where you pay a little bit in the short, you pay more in the short term, or a decent amount in the short term, but you get a guy for, like you said, for 2 or 3 years that can play right field at a level similar to Kyle Tucker.
I don't think you can look at it that way. Like, I don't think you can look at it, we're trading Kyle Tucker, we have to go out and find a right fielder that can give us 70% of Kyle Tucker. To me, it is always trying, like, always having this baseline prevailing mentality, and then on top of that, always trying to better your team fiscally responsible. I don't think you can approach free agency, let's go out and get the best right fielder that we possibly can because we traded Tucker. To me, it's about building the best complete team. Not trying
right, but I didn't
to get
say the best
blinders
right fielder.
On. When and you said a guy who's like, no, you said trade Kyle Tucker and then go find a guy who can give you production similar to Kyle Tucker.
Yeah, whether it's in the trade or in free agency. You got Paredes
that's
by
very
doing
difficult
that,
to do.
And you actually solved a different problem. And, you know, because at the time you didn't know Bregman wasn't signed yet, but you were moving, you realized you were going to have to probably move on from him. So with Bregman out the door as part of the deal to trade Kyle Tucker, maybe you didn't get a right fielder, but you got a third baseman, and you got a third baseman that you felt pretty good about that could be similar to Alex Bregman. And we can nitpick the defense versus the offense and all those things at $6 million a year with team control that fits more into what they're looking for, but that fills that void. Now, how do you fill right field? We saw that it took till the end of, you know, spring training, and they decided to go with Cam Smith because of the spring he had. But we were talking about guys that might be out there, guys that might be a short-term fix that are veterans that could actually still help fill the void. I think that's similar.
Yeah, maybe it's just a difference of philosophy. But to me, you always have to do what is the best interest of your team. It can't be like, well, we lost our right fielder, let's go out and find a free agent right fielder that is, you know, the best free agent right fielder on the market. Like, they didn't even do that. Like, they went with the prospect. They went with Cam Smith. If they didn't go Cam Smith, they were going Chaz McCormick, who was already in-house. So, always be looking to make your team better. But, I mean, it's 7-9. Like, this is like a global conversation, mm-hmm. a very macro conversation.
And I think that, again, because we're still in it, that a lot of people don't have the time to look back and step away and go, this run is pretty unheard of in baseball, and the fans have been spoiled for the length of it. And you know, you see other teams that when their run is over, they just literally pull the plug, start loading up on prospects, and realize there's going to be a downtime where hopefully you can bounce back up. And Cleveland's one of those teams where they had a lot of big names. They definitely sold out when those names were coming close to being, you know, their contracts were coming up. They got prospects. They tried to reload. At a certain point, they became consistent enough to try and compete for a playoff spot. But the days of making, you know, competing for a World Series and having really big name superstar type players were gone for the short term. You hope you develop more. That's different because of the market that they're in too, and the ownership that they have versus some of the other teams that we talk about. Like, because the Yankees, just unfairly, they can do in the Mets and the and even to some degree.
I feel like you hold the Yankees in too high financial regard these days. Like,
they changed a little bit in the last couple of years. Yes,
the Steinbrenner kid isn't as crazy and radical as George Steinbrenner was.
Hank's like, not, but they signed Fried to a massive deal.
Right, but they didn't sign Soto, and they would have signed Adamas had they not signed Soto, but they were waiting on Soto. Like, that's stuff that George Steinbrenner wouldn't have done back in the day. Like, are they still going to be top five in payroll? Yes. Are they going to spend radically like they did with George Steinbrenner? No.
Okay, but I also think that they're going to spend at a level, like Brian's point, of one of the top three teams in the league every single year.
But they're not going
to
be like
Or whatever they want to.
Or old George Steinbrenner. Like, that to me, they're not the Mets. To me, they're on a tier below
like
the Mets.
Dodgers.
To me, they're on a tier below the Dodgers.
Yeah.
Like, the Dodgers and the Mets, to me, are the biggest spenders. Like, the Yankees are kind of fiscally responsible in a way. Red Sox have been a lot cheaper over the years.
They
and, like, their fan base be like, we need to spend more money. And then that's kind of like the whole Bregman deal. Texture says they should have traded Tucker at the deadline last year. Trading Tucker, who's hurt.
Yeah.
Trading Tucker in the offseason was a massive blunder. D. Brown is in over his head. I disagree. And even if he wasn't hurt, to me, you're not trading him at the deadline last year. I think the offseason was the time to do it. Texture, you also have to hit on your draft picks. No doubt. You do have to hit on your draft picks. And we'll see if Dana Brown's good or not, like, when it comes to that. Like, it's too early in Dana Brown's tenure to tell if he's going to be a good drafter or not. There are some things that point positively in his direction. Like, Jake Bloss came up quickly and was, like, used in a trade to get you a decent starting pitcher last year at the deadline that actually pitched really well for you. Bryce Matthews has some holes, but, like, is kind of close. So we'll see. Like, Walker Yannick was a first rounder last year. Like, we'll see. Like, it's too early to tell if Dana Brown's a good drafter or not. Great talent evaluator. I know that's his calling card, but let's see it as a general manager. And to me, we don't have enough evidence yet to know.
Yeah, look, I feel confident in him, and for all the reasons that you stated. But you're right. I mean, the proof's in the pudding when these guys actually, you know, continue to produce and continue to climb up the ranks. But you definitely have to hit on your picks. And that's something that we will see. But I believe in Dana Brown in that front for sure.
Based on what?
Based on the fact that his time in Atlanta, and I know that he wasn't the general manager, but again, like you said, it's his calling card, what he's known for, and what he did last year, and some of the guys that he drafted were guys that were able to either net you other players or in the that are, you know, that look like they're going to be Major League Baseball players. I think he, you know, part of the Kyle Tucker trade was being able to evaluate that Cam Smith looked like a guy that he had scouted at Florida State that he was really high on. He had said that he didn't think he could get him when the Astros were drafting, but now using the opportunity to take his knowledge and his ability to analyze talent, that was a guy that he was hell-bent focused on getting as part of the trade back.
I don't think that was that difficult to do. Like, Cam Smith was universally a top 30 prospect that was a first-round draft pick last year.
Okay, but even
I don't think you can point to Dana Brown's genius and be like, oh, I thought this Cam Smith's a diamond in the rough. Like, everybody knew he was a top prospect.
But, like, you know, gloss the pit, you get a pitcher in 1 year, you turn him around in the Toronto trade so you could get Kikuchi.
Yeah.
You know, I think that Wisniewski was a guy that I don't know that where the Cubs actually thought he was going, but in a short, seemingly so far, it looks like a guy that he had kind of, you know, focused on as a guy that he wanted to get back in the trade has looked pretty good. So I believe in his ability to evaluate talent.
Yeah, I do think he's going to be good at it. If I had to guess one way or the other, I think he's going to be good. I think there are some clues, and I think you pointed to a good chunk of them that show he's going to be good at it. But time will tell. Like, what if Bryce Matthews turns out to, like, be a guy who can't hit breaking stuff and can never play in the bigs because his strikeout rate's 30%?
Yeah,
probably change our opinion. And Bryce Matthews' strikeout rate right now is pretty terrible.
And the thing is that, you know, you can evaluate to your, you know, to your heart's content and realize that, as we've seen, some guys are going to hit a wall at a certain point and they become, you know, AAA players for the majority of their career. Like, the shortcomings are too great and they don't become consistent major leaguers, but it's all based on potential because there's a lot of those guys in the bigs. And no matter, you know, how many people are, there's been how many guys that are labeled as a, you know,
sure,
a true next
sure,
coming of a
absolutely.
Star.
But the best GMs are the ones that hit more often than not.
Okay.
Like,
yeah.
You can't just say it's all randomness. Like,
I'm not saying
yes,
it's all
you're right.
Randomness.
Like,
that's why I'm saying I believe in him.
Like, every GM is going to have a lot of misses, no doubt, especially in baseball. Mm-hmm. Like, baseball probably more than any other sport. But the ones that are really good at drafting and the ones that are really bad at drafting, there's a difference there. It's not randomness. It's the guys that are up here that are the very best are better at scouting than the guys that are at the very bottom.
Well, I'm not saying it's random at all, but that's why I'm also saying why I believe in him, because I think that more times than not, he has a good eye for identifying skill sets that are going to translate to at least making the major league, you know, making the major leagues and being a player that you can count on. And you're right. I mean, it's a crapshoot more so than any other draft in this league, probably, and in sports, I should say. And the fact is that I believe in what he can do.
Yeah, I hope so. I do hope so. 713-780-ESPN. Text line's on fire with this, so we'll keep the conversation going. Where are you with Dana? Where are you with Crane? 16 games in, and we're doing this. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Guys, we know the clock is ticking. We know tax day is today, but how about property tax day, which is actually May the 15th? That is your deadline to protest your property taxes. Don't wait until the final whistle or it's too late. Get in touch with someone that knows what they're doing that can help you right now, like Century Property Tax Consultants. They're the best in the business, in my mind, because they have over 60 combined years of experience, and they can do all kinds of property taxes. They can fight property taxes on residential, commercial, industrial, or business properties, and they're going to fight to help you reduce your taxes. If they don't save you money, you don't have to pay them. That's the best deal of all. Yes, I can tell you till I'm blue in the face that they're experienced. Yes, I can tell you that they get results. But the biggest thing is you want to know how can they help you and what's it going to cost me? Well, it's not going to cost you a thing if you lose. So basically you have nothing to lose and you should trust them to get it done for you because you only pay if they win. All you got to do is go to CPROtax.com right now. That's CPROtax.com right now. Sign up. You don't have to go fight them. They'll fight them for you, and they get you results. Let them fight the battle and let you reap the rewards. That's the way they do business. Check them out today. Tell them we sent you by. CPROtax.com. Century Property Tax Consultants. Don't pay more taxes than you need to. Check them out today.
ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
One of my notes was Contreras needs to be the first guy down when either Caleb Ort or Forrest Whitley comes back. Well, the Astros sent him down today, taking his spot. Nick Hernandez, go Cougs! Nick Hernandez, former Cougar. I shouldn't say that. Once a Cougar, always a Cougar. Nick Hernandez has been recalled from AAA Sugarland. So Contreras out, Hernandez in for the roster there.
Saw that. Yeah, I think you know me. I was already done with him. It couldn't happen soon enough, so at least that's the first domino to fall.
Texture really hate when the show is just Branham telling Blankers his opinion is wrong. I never told Blankers he was wrong. I actually agreed with most of what he was saying. I just tried to get a rationale of why he thought what he did. Like, you know, the Dana Brown thing. Like, what gives you good vibes from Dana Brown? And I thought we got a better answer. Not a better answer, but just a more detailed answer. So don't be so soft, Texture. Dana's doing a great job, says another Texture. I'm more in on Dana than out on Dana. So, like, I'm cool with what Dana has done so far. Do I think he's as good as Luno? No. Do I think he's as good as James Click? No. Do I think the Astros will be in good hands with him? I lean more yes than no, but I can't tell you definitively one way or the other yet.
Yeah, no, I think that until you get a good sample size to see, and obviously the job is a full body of work. It's not just being able to be talent evaluators. It's, you know, and some things we'll never know. Like, what is the threshold where Jim Crane says no, or how much money does he have to play with, or what are there limitations for him to be able to do the job that he does? But from a talent evaluation standpoint, you said it last segment, and you can't argue with that. Until you see these guys come to fruition and become big league players that play a role, you can't be sold no matter how high they're rated.
Let's go out to the HR&P listener line. Gary, you're in the Hive. What's going on, Gary?
Hey, what's up, guys? I just want to say overall, like, I mean, I believe in Dana, but, I mean, we don't really have enough hay in the barn to make a decision yet. Like, I think the Kikuchi thing was kind of telling because everybody's like, oh, my God, it's a terrible trade. And then The dude was like 9 out of 10 stars, right? So I think he has the eye. But overall, right, and I'm like old school Astros guy, I think, like, it's kind of already over. It's just kind of happening in slow motion. Because say we don't start super-duper slow last season. Like, that's a disappointing season. Sub 90 wins, barely win a down division, and get swept in the wild card. I think the slow start, and then we kind of, like, picked it up really good, kind of masked the fact that it was a disappointing season last year. And now we're kind of seeming like a 500-ish team, right? We can still, like, maybe go to the playoffs. But I think overall, like, he's not a magician. And at some point, you just lose too much talent to be super-duper World Series contenders. And I just think that's where we are right now.
Appreciate the call, Gary. Gary, normally the all things general manager that drives him to call, but always appreciate when he calls in. Look, I mean, I said it earlier. When you look at the run that they've been on and the sustained run that they've been on, it is very rare to find teams that can do this. And when you're able to do it, you're spoiled because you get used to it and then you expect it. But this isn't an unexpected run to be able to be this successful for this length of a period of time. And now they're trying to make sure that it isn't over yet, that they're trying to see if there's a way to get to what Gary's talking about, to avoid getting to where Gary's talking about it too soon. But it's obviously a massive challenge no matter what. And like I said, and the other thing is when you're not one of those three teams we mentioned that are the haves and you're trying to stay away from being the have-nots, to Jeremy's point, it's hard to like create the balance where I'm trading a guy, but I'm getting enough prospects and kind of timing those so that they can come back and help you. But to think that doing all those things will allow you to stay at a level where you're highly competitive in baseball, it's not realistic.
I think it's easier to be done in baseball than any other sport. I think it is realistic. But I think you have to have a philosophy of being risky, a philosophy of doing things that are going to look really, really bad. And I agree with what Gary said. Like, I didn't like the Kikuchi trade whenever it was made. Mm-hmm. Right now, I don't care about these guys. Like, Jake Bloss, to me, doesn't look like he's going to be a starting-level pitcher in the big leagues. Joey Loperfido, I was starting to have those concerns whenever he was still with the Astros before he was traded. Did I want to see him in the lineup to see what he had? Yes, because the Astros outfield last year was putrid. But he strikes out a lot. I thought his defense was overrated. He'd make a diving play. Everybody's like, oh, look at that. We had a catch probability of 95% because he got bad jumps out there. Will Wagner, we'll see. Like, that's the one that I fear the most. But, like, none of those guys are all-stars. Like, all three of those guys might be career bench guys. Loperfido, a fourth, fifth outfielder. Will Wagner, a lefty bat off the bench. Jake Bloss, maybe he becomes a number five starter. And I didn't like it at the time. Now, okay, it makes a lot more sense. I think what Gary's second point was that the Astros have lost too much talent, that it's hard to keep the team relevant, or it's hard to keep them as, like, you know, one of the best teams in baseball. I think that Dana Brown sees that too, Gary. And I think that's why he made the Kyle Tucker trade. It's like, we need a reset in order to sustain winning for a very long time. And again, like, I think this is stuff that should have been happening a long time ago. I think you should have done it with Bregman. I think you should have done it with Correa. I think you should have done it with Springer. That way you can always have a good minor league system. How do you always have a good minor league system and also a really good team? Well, you have to be willing to trade players from that really good team that you know are going to leave for the minor league players that are going to help you down the road. And it's very unpopular to do. We saw it with Tucker. The fan base isn't going to be happy about it because you are probably lessening your peak. But lessening your peak doesn't mean you're still not capable of winning at all. And it also increases the sustainability of winning. And I think that's what Dana Brown sees, Gary. He looks at a roster that's kind of like, oh, we need a reset. How can we get a reset? Well, we can't let Tucker walk for free. Let's see if we can trade years of club control, a prospect that could help us for the next 6-7 years and might be a middle-of-the-bat lineup. So perhaps we're going through a reset with the Astros, and they're going to be, like, okay enough where maybe they make the playoffs. But then if Cam Smith emerges into, you know, a bona fide slugger that can bat next to Yordan, and now you have a really good 3-4 for the next 6-7 years, okay, it changes the scope of who this Astros team is. So I do think that Dana Brown has that second point that Gary made in mind.
Yeah, I just, my point was, yeah, you could still be successful and win games and possibly, you know, get into the playoffs. I just think that to think that they can be competitive for a World Series and keep that run going farther than it's already gone, I think that it gets to the point at a certain point where you just have to be realistic that that's almost impossible for teams to do.
I don't think so.
I do, except for if you're the two New York teams and the teams we've mentioned. because of the fact that at a certain point when you can't afford to keep playing players, you have to – the guys that you get back in return and the prospects that you're developing and drafting, you have to have time for them to kind of get to the big leagues and settle in to see that they could be those players.
Do you like the Kyle Tucker trade?
Right now I do, yeah.
So if you did it that four or five other times, do you think the Astros would be in a better spot today?
Well, but in the, again, but you think about what you're saying. Would they be in a better spot today? But would you be lesser than for the years in between that we just had success because of the fact that you traded away guys before they walked and you didn't make the runs or maybe win the second World Series or do some of the things that you did?
They won the second World Series the year after Correa left.
Right, that's one guy, Jeremy, but I'm just saying.
That's
you just
one World
me,
Series.
If they had done it with all those guys, then you might not have had the sustained success that you've had.
When has losing one of those guys hurt the Astros in terms of their chances of winning at all? They've been to two World Series, went to four. Could very easily could have won both of those, and they had guys leaving throughout the entire time. It's a new question because they've – I'm sorry that I'm pushing back. Don't be so sensitive about it.
It's not just the pushback, Jeremy. It's the nitpicking, but go right ahead.
It's not nitpicking. That's what pushbacking is. It's nitpicking a certain point of the argument that I disagree with. Like, you can do it with me, too. It's fine. Like, that's what sports talk's all about. Like, you're friends with Charles Barkley. Like, go look at Shaq and Charles Barkley fight all the time and nitpick each other all the time. Like, it's not new to sports radio.
I don't need you to explain to me what sports radio is.
Well, it sounds like you're ignorant to it.
No, I don't. I just get tired of it because we've already had the initial
because
pushback.
Because you get tired when people challenge your opinion.
No, that's not true, Jeremy, because I continue to respond every time that you do it, but then you continue to do it. At a certain point, you just start nitpicking it instead of just moving on to the next part of it.
Because that's a counterpoint. That's me defending my argument. Can I do that?
You already do, so keep doing it.
Well, it sounds like it bothers you.
You bother me right now, yes, because it's always your way and you always seem to think that you've got it all figured out.
Because if I don't give you a counterpoint, now it's just you make the final point there's no counterpoint.
I don't need
it.
The final
That's
point.
That's the back and forth. It sounds like you're really demanding it.
I'm not at all.
Okay. All right. Well, the Astros have always won when they let players leave. So if they trade players, what makes you think they're not going to continue to win?
Because you said if they had done that with all those guys that walked away, those seasons, if you did it before the trade deadline or when you did it, mattered in terms of those guys still played a role in their final seasons when you let them walk away, before you let them walk away, for them competing for a World Series title. If they walk away, you don't know if you still would have done the same things.
Okay, counterpoint. Not trying to nitpick.
I'm done with
you.
That. Just counterpoint it. I don't need the little patronizing that goes with it.
Well, it seemed to offend you the other time, so I just wanted to be clear. I'm not trying to fight you here. Alex Bregman was 2-Q in the playoffs last year. Would it have killed the Astros if they traded Bregman a year too early?
Right, the year you can point to that one as being
okay, I was
one...
going through all of them. Carlos Correa, his final year, what did they do in his final year? Did they go to the ALCS probably? Didn't win the World Series in his final year. They won it the very next year that he was gone. George Springer, when he left, was the COVID year. They lost in the ALCS. Gerrit Cole, the last year he was gone, they lost in the World Series. So, like, all of these guys that, like, are these great players that the Astros have let leave, they didn't win it all in their final year.
No, I'm saying, but if you trade them before you finish out that final year, that you might not have gotten as far as they had gotten, which is part of this long-standing golden era of Astros baseball. You don't get that far, possibly, if you pull the plug at the trade deadline, before you even get to the point where, whether they won a World Series or not, they had sustained success.
Okay, 3 or 4 years down the road, like, would you rather the Astros, instead of going to the ALCS, they lose in the divisional round, but they add two players that help them in 3 to 4 years?
But you don't know if you're going to hit.
That's the trade-off, though.
Right,
that's
but you
the
also don't know if those players are going to hit. So, yes, I mean,
but you also don't know you're going to the ALCS. Like, there's no guarantees either way.
Okay, what I'm saying is you went to the ALCS or you went to a World Series. And if you trade those guys away, the chances are less that you go that year that you traded them away, and then you have to hit on the prospects that you got in order to return to that kind of success afterwards.
Yeah, but you're guaranteeing your side of the argument. You're guaranteeing that you don't go as far. That's an unknown. We don't know that. We don't know that they would be out around earlier by trading that player. We're making that assumption into a guarantee when it's not. So, like, you're right that you don't know about the prospects and it's an unknown, but you're trading potential rounds of playoffs for guys who could potentially help you in the future. So it depends on what you want. Like, you might be a guy that, hey, I want to go to the ALCS World Series even if we lose, and I'm willing to surrender a couple of players in the future. And that's fine. Like, that, I'm not telling you that's wrong or anything. The opposite of that, though, is I'm willing to risk being like eliminated a round early for guys who are going to help me in the future. And like that's the impasse here. And that's fine to have that impasse. Like it's totally okay. 713-780 ESPN HRMP listener line. We'll keep this rolling on the other side. It is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.